Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Federal Vacancies Reform Act Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 21, 2017, the Supreme Court decided National Labor Relations Board v. Southwest General, Inc. Southwest General, Inc. provides ambulance services to hospitals in Arizona. A union had negotiated longevity pay for Southwest General's emergency medical technicians, nurses, and firefighters. In December 2012, between the expiration of one collective bargaining agreement and the negotiation of a new one, Southwest General stopped paying the longevity pay. The union filed an unfair labor practices claim with the National Labor Relations Board, which issued a formal complaint. An administrative law judge determined that Southwest General had committed unfair labor practices, but Southwest General contended that the NLRB complaint was invalid because the acting general counsel of the NLRB at the time, Leif Solomon, had been serving in violation of the Federal Vacancies Reform Act. President Barack Obama had nominated Solomon, who had then been serving as acting general counsel after the general counsel had resigned, to serve as general counsel, but the Senate had not acted on the nomination. The president had ultimately withdrawn the nomination and replaced it with that of Richard Griffin, who was confirmed. In the intervening period, including when the NLRB complaint had issued against Southwest General, Solomon had continued to serve as acting general counsel. Southwest General argued that under the FVRA, Solomon became ineligible to hold the acting position once nominated by the president to the general counsel position. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit agreed and vacated the NLRB's enforcement order. The NLRB then obtained a writ of certiorari from the Supreme Court. By a vote of 6-2, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the D.C. Circuit. In an opinion by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that, 1. Subsection B1 of the Federal Vacancies Reform Act of 1998, which prevents a person who has been nominated to fill a vacant office requiring presidential appointment and Senate confirmation from performing the duties of that office in an acting capacity, applies to anyone performing acting service under the FVRA, and is not limited to first assistants performing acting service under subsection A1. And 2, subsection B1 prohibited Leif Solomon from continuing his service as acting general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board once the president nominated him to fill the position permanently. The Chief Justice's majority opinion was joined by Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Breyer, Alito, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justice Ginsburg joined. To discuss the case, we have Kristen Hickman, who is the Distinguished McKnight University Professor, Harlan Albert Rogers Professor of Law, and Associate Director, Corporate Institute at University of Minnesota Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Hickman.
The statute at issue in this case is the Federal Vacancies Reform Act of 1998, specifically 5 U.S.C. Section 3345. When a vacancy arises for an office like General Counsel of the NLRB, Section 3345A of the Vacancies Act provides three separate categories of persons that the President can name to temporarily perform the functions and duties of the vacant office. First, Section 3345A1 of the statute suggests as a default that the first assistant to the vacant office shall perform the functions and duties of the office temporarily in an acting capacity. Second, Section 3345A2 of the statute alternatively allows the President to tap instead another principal officer appointed by the President with the advice and consent of the Senate. Third, Section 3345A3 of the statute alternatively allows the President to name another senior official from the same agency, specifically someone who has achieved a pay level of at least GS-15. To serve temporarily in that acting capacity. Next, Section 3345B in turn places a limitation on who can fill a vacancy. That provision says that notwithstanding subsection A1, a person may not serve as an acting officer for an office if the person did not serve in the position of first assistant in the past year, or has served in the position of first assistant for less than 90 days, and if the President nominates the person to the Senate for appointment to the office on a more permanent basis. Essentially, this case reduces to a dispute about that notwithstanding clause at the start of Section 3345B, when it says that the limitation of that provision applies notwithstanding subsection A1. In other words, does the limitation of Section 3345(b)(1) on the President's discretion to choose a temporary replacement to fill a vacancy apply only to first assistants under Section 3345(a)(1), or does the limitation apply to any person described by Section 3345(a)(1), (a)(2), or (a)(3)? The answer to this question matters in this case because Leif Solomon was never a first assistant. Meanwhile, as the government argued out in its brief, the Office of Legal Counsel, the Government Accountability Office, and past practice supported its interpretation of the statute and the validity of Leif Solomon's service in an acting capacity. But the D.C. Circuit and the Ninth Circuit both sided with the challenger's contrary interpretation. In a majority opinion written by Chief Justice Roberts on behalf of a 6-justice majority of an 8-justice court, the Supreme Court likewise decided in favor of Southwest General. Once President Obama nominated Leif Solomon to serve permanently as the NLRB's general counsel, Solomon's continued service as acting general counsel violated the Vacancies Act. Hence, the Supreme Court affirmed the D.C. Circuit's decision to vacate the NLRB's order against Southwest General. Justice Thomas joined the majority opinion, but also filed a separate concurring opinion, while Justice Sotomayor authored a dissenting opinion in which she was joined by Justice Ginsburg. For the most part, the court's reasoning is rooted in traditional tools of statutory construction. The statute's expansive use of the word person, dictionary definitions of the word notwithstanding, the relevance or lack thereof of the expressio unius canon and the rule against superfluities, and so on. The court decided that the meaning of the text was clear, so the court said it need not consider the NLRB's claims that legislative history, statutory purpose, and post-enactment practice supported its alternative interpretation. Yet the court went on to specifically address and reject those arguments as not compelling. Justice Sotomayor's dissent likewise focused principally on traditional tools of statutory construction. For example, she found more persuasive an argument advanced by the government applying the expressio unius canon and the rule against superfluities that the notwithstanding provision's specific mention of Section 3345(a)(1), but not Section 3345(a)(2) or (a)(3), makes clear Congress's intent to restrict that limitation's reach in a way that would support Leif Solomon's continued service as acting general counsel. Justice Sotomayor was also more willing to consider extra-textual arguments predicated on events leading to Congress's enactment of the Vacancies Act, as well as post-enactment practice. Nevertheless, while both the majority and dissenting opinions focused mainly on traditional tools of statutory construction, because the case concerned the appointment of a principal officer, perhaps it was inevitable that we would see the occasional nod toward the court's constitutional law jurisprudence in that area. Chief Justice Roberts' opinion for the majority opens with a reference to the Appointments Clause of Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, and it later goes on to emphasize the Senate's advice and consent power as a critical structural safeguard of the constitutional scheme. Correspondingly, although post-enactment practice has often been used by the courts as a tool of statutory construction, the NLRB's reliance on post-enactment practice as evidence of how the Vacancies Act ought to be interpreted also echoes reasoning of some of the court's more recent constitutional cases concerning the appointment and removal powers. For example, Justice Breyer's opinion for the court in Noel Canning versus NLRB relied at least partly on historical practice in evaluating the constitutional parameters of recess appointments, and the NLRB in turn cited Noel Canning in the Southwest General case, although the majority rejected Noel Canning's relevance to interpreting the Vacancies Act. Justice Thomas's concurring opinion goes much further than the majority's occasional fleeting references to the Constitution. Justice Thomas agreed with the court's interpretation of the Vacancies Act, but he wrote separately to explain his view that the Constitution's Appointments Clause likely prohibited Solomon's appointment, in large part, he said, because Justice Sotomayor's dissenting opinion would interpret the Vacancies Act differently from the majority. Justice Thomas reasoned that based on the duties and responsibilities of the NLRB's general counsel, holders of that position are both officers of the United States for Appointments Clause purposes and principal officers, as that term is understood in relation to the inferior officers specifically referenced in the Appointments Clause. The Appointments Clause requires that principal officers be appointed by the President with the advice and consent of the Senate. And the Appointments Clause does not allow Congress to enact laws vesting the appointment of principal officers in the President alone. Consequently, according to Justice Thomas, the President could not appoint Leif Solomon to assume the responsibilities and perform the duties of the NLRB's general counsel position, even temporarily, without first obtaining the advice and consent of the Senate. In short, whereas the majority's opinion in Southwest General is rather limited in scope to deciding how the particular circumstances of Leif Solomon's service fit within the Vacancy Act's terms, Justice Thomas's concurrence sweepingly questions whether the Vacancy Act's authorization of service in an acting capacity is constitutional at all when the position in question is that of a principal officer. Justice Thomas seemed to recognize that precluding service in an acting capacity for all principal officer positions could be challenging for government operations. Quoting INS versus Chadha, he says that the burdens on governmental processes that the Appointments Clause imposes may often seem clumsy, inefficient, even unworkable, and he acknowledges that granting the President unilateral power to fill vacancies in high offices might contribute to more efficient government. But he says the Appointments Clause is not an empty formality. Given Justice Thomas's opinion, it seems reasonable to assume that litigants now will be looking forward to opportunities to challenge actions of government officials serving as principal officers in an acting capacity, even if their appointments are consistent with the requirements of the Vacancies Act. So how big of a problem would that really be if the court were to embrace Justice Thomas's comparatively sweeping condemnation of the Vacancies Act's constitutionality? In contemplating the possibility that the court might read the Vacancies Act to prohibit acting service for nominees like Leif Solomon, the government in Southwest General pointed to the nominations of 112 individuals across three presidential administrations that were inconsistent with how the Supreme Court has now interpreted the Vacancies Act. That's not an insignificant number, to be sure, but it's not that many either. Going forward, the court's interpretation of the Vacancies Act in Southwest General leaves plenty of people eligible to fill principal officer positions in an acting capacity, even if it constrains the president's choices somewhat more than the president might like. By comparison, there are roughly 1,200 senior government officials whose appointments are presently subject to Senate confirmation. Some of those are arguably inferior officers for whom Congress simply hasn't provided an alternative appointment mechanism, so it's not entirely clear just how many of those 1,200 senior government officials are principal officers. But it's probably safe to guess that at least a substantial plurality, if not a majority, are. These are the folks who provide direction for the many, many agencies, boards, bureaus, and offices that wield a substantial amount of decision-making power under our present system of government. Justice Thomas is surely correct that the advice and consent feature of the Appointments Clause exists to prevent the serious risk for abuse and corruption posed by permitting one person to fill every office in the government. And he is also undoubtedly right that Congress has at times been too willing to preference its own notions of efficiency or expediency over the Constitution's separation of powers principles. According to Federalist 76, however, the founders had two separate thoughts in mind when they wrote the Appointments Clause. Their other objective was to maximize public accountability for the actions of appointees to high government office by vesting the power of nomination in the hands of the president alone rather than in a committee. They were concerned that putting the nominating power in the hands of a collective body, even a small one, would direct the focus away from the merits of the individual nominee and toward the sorts of parochial compromises that are perhaps inevitable with group decision-making, to the detriment of the public interest. Assigning the power of nomination to the president alone would more closely tie the consequences of appointments to the president's own reputation. Hence, to quote Federalist 76, the sole and undivided responsibility of one man will naturally beget a livelier sense of duty and a more exact regard to reputation. He will, on this account, feel himself under stronger obligations and more interested to investigate with care the qualities requisite to the stations to be filled, and to prefer with impartiality the persons who may have the fairest pretensions to them. In other words, the appointments clause seeks not only to prevent abuse and corruption by using the Senate as a check against the president's appointment power, but also to balance that concern against the good government objective of making the president most directly and clearly accountable to the people for the actions of his appointees. Acting officials appointed by the president are thought to have less power to direct agency action and are less accountable to the president than traditional appointees confirmed by the Senate. Nevertheless, an acting official appointed by the president alone surely will have more power to direct agency action and be more accountable to the president and thus to the people than an empty chair. Leadership vacuums rarely lead to positive outcomes for the administration of government functions. Directionless agencies are least likely to serve the public interest well, and yet are the hardest to hold accountable for their failures. The Vacancies Act does not require the president to fill a vacancy with an acting official. And if the president chooses not to fill a vacancy with an acting official, then he is accountable for the consequences of that decision as well. But to declare the Vacancies Act unconstitutional allows the president to disclaim accountability for the actions of the agencies under his command while they lack that leadership. In summary, the Appointments Clause reflects an effort to strike a balance between a justifiable fear of corruption and a goal of maximizing public accountability for the actions of government agencies. Justice Thomas's opinion suggests that he would give a little more weight to the anti-corruption side of that equation. One can argue that the Vacancies Act reflects Congress's decision to give a little more weight in the balance to preserving the president's accountability for the actions of agency officials. Either way, however we strike that balance, the question raised by Justice Thomas's opinion as to whether the Vacancies Act is constitutional under the Appointments Clause seems destined now to be one that the courts will be called upon to address.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.